Number 5.
Decatur Pittman donated this rare avian effigy vessel from near Cedar Key to the Florida Museum of Natural History just over 100 years ago. Mr. Pittman was an avocational archaeologist that amassed a collection of over 7,000 objects in the 1880s from a burial mound on what he called Palmetto Island. Most of these objects were ceramic sherds with diverse decorations from which 100 vessels were reconstructed from the estimated 600 represented in the collection, including the bird effigy pot in front of you. This pot is fascinating because it is a rare combination of two mirrored avian images made from non-local clay. The head of each effigy was modeled in three dimensions, and its body, tail, and wings were incised into the clay before the pot was fired. The head's crest and flat rectangular bill suggest that it represented a water bird of some kind, such as a wood duck. The incised wings are unusual because they become stylized designs along the sides of the pot that are associated with the Wheaton Island tradition, practiced about 1,000 to 1,500 years ago in the Deep South. These effigy pots were always found in burial mounds, and they may have been intentionally broken to release their spirits as intermediaries in the afterlife. The mica inclusions in the clay of this vessel indicate it was probably made in the panhandle of Florida or southwest Georgia. My name is Mark Donop. I'm a doctoral student at the University of Florida in anthropology, and I work in the collections at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 73.
My story is about the four-headed pot from the McEthan site in North Florida. Dr. Jerry Milanich, who was our curator of archaeology here at the Florida Museum, had an NSF grant in the late 1970s to excavate the mounds and midden at the site. In the fall of 1977, Jerry conducted a field school of UF anthropology students to excavate mounds B and C. I was a grad student and teaching assistant for the field school. We spent the last half of the semester excavating Mound C. This was a ceremonial mound that had been extensively looted, and the landowner had recovered several broken Wheaton Island pots from the site. Our excavation really consisted of systematically sifting the disturbed soil and sand, and we recovered some pottery that cross-mended with the pots that the landowner had found. We didn't have much expectation of finding undisturbed deposits in the mound. On the one day that Jerry had to be away from the site and I was in charge, we actually found the four-headed pot. We exposed it carefully and cleared off the sand so we could get a photograph of it in situ. It was almost getting dark by this time, but we were able to get a photograph, and we didn't want to leave it in the ground overnight. So we carefully removed it and packed it up, and then after the field school was over, we brought it back to the lab here at the museum. The pot had been broken in situ, except for the base, which was knocked out of it before the pot was deposited in the mound. So everything was recovered except for a couple of pieces. And we've reconstructed the pot in the lab, and this pot has become really the icon for Wheaton Island pottery in Florida. My name is Ann Cordell. I'm a collection manager in the Ceramic Technology Lab at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 75.
Florida has one of the richest documented archaeological records of dugout canoes in the country, with almost 400 recorded canoes from over 235 sites. The majority have been recorded from North Central Florida, also known as the Lake District, but they have been found as far south as the Florida Keys and as far north as the Panhandle, as well as along various riverbanks. Most Florida canoes through time have a fairly similar design, with a not too dissimilar shape to the bow and the stern. A few have exhibited a more prominent platform prow. Most appear, however, as if they could have been used to paddle and pole through Florida's relatively shallow waters and marshes from either end. They have ranged in length from approximately 9 feet to 27 feet long, with the longest found along the shores of the Gulf of Mexico that were measured over 40 feet as it was missing part of its stern. Overall, these canoe trees have been made from pine or cypress and crafted with stone or shell tools until the contact period, when they were crafted with metal tools. The sharp metal tools leave distinct squared edges in the wood versus the more rounded depression left by shell and stone woodworking tools such as axes, adzes, and gouges. Dugout Canoes Paddling Through the Americas, a traveling exhibit designed by the Florida Museum, was inspired by a rare find of 101 ancient dugouts found along the exposed shoreline of Noonan's Lake here in Gainesville, Florida, in the summer of 2000 when we were experiencing a severe drought. As the dugout's history was being unfolded one by one, so was the larger story. The oldest Florida canoe dates to approximately 7,000 years ago from De Leon Springs. Those from Noonan's Lake range from 400 to almost 5,000 years ago. Using various traditional and innovative methods, we are testing green solutions to preserve these dried, large, unique artifacts. In addition, new application for these wooden canoes involves isotopic analysis to see if we can source where canoe trees grew versus where they were found archaeologically. The latter minimally is aiding us in looking at these rare biological and cultural treasures, Florida's ancient watercraft, to learn more about past travel, trade, and migration, as well as changing environments. I'm Donna Rule. I'm the Florida Archaeology and Bioarchaeology Collections Manager, as well as the Archaeobotanist for the Environmental Archaeology Program here at the Florida Museum.
Number 85.
These few peach stones literally represent the hundreds and hundreds of peaches that were recovered from this rare archaeological find, along with other artifacts from the Fig Springs site in Columbia County, which is the Spanish mission of San Martin de Temuco, and these were excavated by John Gargan, an archaeologist, back in the 1950s. They survived in part in the archaeological record because they are more robust than most seeds, not the edible portion of the fruit, and most importantly because they were deposited in a wet anaerobic environment, preventing them from decay and microbial activity. Interestingly, Prunus persica, the scientific name for peaches, have their origin in northern China, dating some 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. They arrive in the Americas with the earliest explorers and into La Florida with Pedro Menendez de Avilés. Peaches were adopted from the start by Native Americans who were reported to have dried and stored them like persimmons and plums. They also adapted readily to the climate and soil conditions and spread throughout the Southeast and have been found at most mission sites across La Florida and at early Spanish sites as far west as the Mississippi. So much so that by the 1800s, naturalists such as Larson and the Bartrams believed the peach orchards they encountered in Georgia were native to America. The peach is among the many examples of the seeds of change that impacted the Western Hemisphere as it was rapidly and vastly transformed biologically and culturally by such introductions. I'm Donna Rule. I'm the Florida Archaeology and Bioarchaeology Collections Manager, as well as the Archaeobotanist for the Environmental Archaeology Program here at the Florida Museum.
Number 103.
These are examples of some of the most iconic stone tools from Florida, hafted bifaces, also known as projectile points. Bifaces are stone tools that were worked on two sides to achieve their shape. They were hafted with pine pitch and animal sinew to a shaft to make a functional spear or arrow or knife. The larger example here, known as a Swanee point, was the tip of a spear 12,000 years ago at the end of the last ice age. It might have been used for dispatching now extinct megafauna such as mammoth and mastodon. The smaller example, known as a Pinellas point, was the tip of an arrow, a true arrowhead, that was used after about 600 AD with the widespread adoption of bow and arrow technology. These artifacts come from the type collection compiled in the 1950s and 60s by Ripley Bullen, a curator and seminal figure in Florida archaeology. The shapes of these stone tools show patterns across time and space, making them useful for understanding chronological and cultural relationships. Bullen provided an important foundation for creating projectile point typologies, and generations of archaeologists have used and refined his compilation for nearly 50 years. My name is Neil Wallace. I'm Associate Curator of Florida Archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 152.
Among some of Florida's earliest and rarest evidence of human occupation have been ivory shaft tools recovered from rivers. The incised ivory tusk, scientifically referred to as proboscideans, shows hasher or zigzag markings at one end and tapering at the other. Both are evidence of human craftsmanship. Such ivory shaft tools reveal the interaction between the earliest people to Florida and extinct Pleistocene fauna, pushing the earliest human sites further and further back, upwards of 14,500 years ago. This example was recovered from an inundated site in the lower Ocilla River, where over 50 other fragmentary pieces were recovered. Florida has almost half of the academically recorded specimens in North America, although the complete specimen on display is rare. Similar shaped tools of bone and ivory have been found across Florida as well as sites in Texas and as far away as Alaska, with similar forms suggesting to researchers that they are contemporaneous and may have had similar functions. They have been found in close contacts with some tools called Clovis points that were also associated with now extinct Rancho La Brea fauna dating to the late Pleistocene, supporting views that the first Floridians and last Proboscideans coexisted. While these artifacts vary in size, some complete shafts have been measured at 30 centimeters long and exhibit a tapered or narrowed point at one end and a flat, beveled area for hafting or latching onto a pole or into a socket at the other. Few have the added hasher markings as can be seen on this specimen. These could have been simple or compound tools used for hunting or defense. Various discussions and hypotheses exist as to their function. Some suggestions include their use as ornaments, others as points, foreshafts, and barbs. And it is possible that these were multi-purpose items with one or more uses. Experimental research and replication studies have and are addressing curvature and breakage patterns minimally, as these hypotheses for ivory as foreshaft, point, and/or barb are tested. I'm Donna Rule. I'm the Florida Archaeology and Bioarchaeology Collections Manager, as well as the archaeobotanist for the Environmental Archaeology Program here at the Florida Museum.